Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz. Welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. I'm a former game warden, a current biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And each weekend, for about an hour, we kind of walk you through, well, tiptoe, walk. We don't run. We make things very relaxed, laid back, and hopefully listener-friendly. And what we do is explore some topics and some issues in the outdoors. And it's not by design anything real controversial. We try to take a topic and explore it a little more in depth with the experts that have some of the best knowledge, skills, and abilities in explaining deer management to you, explaining stocking of fish to you, explaining the issues of aquatic nuisance species, why there is so much concern. And we do that through a number of different guests. And then we also do give you a little better idea of where people are going and what they're doing outdoors with a Minnesota Outdoors report with CJ Johnson. He's actually a Lisbon, North Dakota native. I always enjoy, I've been doing this with CJ for probably a year and a half to 2 years, maybe even longer. I'm not sure how long. But he grew up in Lisbon and has spent his career covering the outdoors in Minnesota. And he gives us a Minnesota Outdoors report. And Pat Stockdale, a very well-respected outdoors communicator, she covers North Dakota outdoors. For us, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. We sprinkle in some of the news of the week as well. And the first topic that we're going to take you a little bit more in depth on this weekend is pronghorn antelope in North Dakota with Bruce Stillings. Understand that we haven't had a pronghorn hunting season since 2009 in North Dakota. And for some people that may not hunt, or for people that have never seen a pronghorn, or who have no real strong interest in pronghorns, you might be a little bit surprised on my own personal emphasis on pronghorn. That being is so many people focus on deer and pheasants and Canada geese and mallards and walleye or pike for good reason. They're very popular. They provide lots of opportunity. People love to hunt deer because there's a heritage of hunting deer. You don't hear people talk about the heritage of catfishing in North Dakota. It's really the heritage of deer hunting. There's plenty of hunters that grew up hunting ducks across North Dakota because at the time they were much more popular than Canada geese in terms of number and opportunity. So I get that. I don't whatsoever hesitate to acknowledge the popularity of these very visible species because more people enjoy something that they have an option to get. You don't have as many people that say, I just love sushi. Well, if you're like me, I've probably never really had sushi. So it's like being a lacrosse fan in North Dakota. Yes, I know there's some lacrosse, but it's just not, doesn't have that access and that availability in North Dakota. And the reason that I tie all this in together is because pronghorn are a small niche species with a long history on the plains of the Midwest and the West. And these niche species are what makes North Dakota so unique in terms of the outdoors. Okay? Follow me on this, because yes, Minnesota may have the market cornered on rough grouse, but we do have rough grouse hunting in North Dakota. Right? North Dakota has pronghorn. North Dakota has sage grouse. A lot of this is, we're talking Western North Dakota. Yeah, Minnesota has prairie chickens. North Dakota has prairie chickens. North Dakota has bighorn sheep, elk hunting, moose hunting. There's a few things that all come together that make up the totality of North Dakota's outdoors and being able to offer some opportunities that other states can't. And one of those is pronghorn. I've gotten reports of pronghorn in the Red River Valley and in Sargent County and in the Findlay area in the past. But Bruce Stillings is a big game biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, and he heads up the pronghorn program for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And Bruce, pronghorn antelope have come a long ways in the last 5 years, and there's a lot of people with smiles on their face. It's definitely something good to be talking about.
Yeah, we've finally kind of moving in the right direction. It's been a tough time going. We had a closed season since 2010, so 4 years of closed seasons, and finally starting to see that population recover, and it's within the population objective and able to provide some minimal opportunities for the 2014.
Now, to many hunters, they know what's been going on with pronghorn antelope, but to some people that do not hunt but are interested in the North Dakota pronghorn population, explain where the population has been at and why the season for hunters has been closed.
Right. I guess we were kind of running the good old days from 1998 through about 2007, and winter pretty much left us alone, and pronghorn responded accordingly, and we had record populations, peak hunting licenses during that time. And then old mother winter returned in 2008. We had a tough one, 2009, and then once again in 2010, and that population really, really went down. So we were forced to close the season in 2010, and it's been closed through 2013. And now the weather's moderated a bit. We had better fawn production, and levels are up to a number within Bowman management area that we can provide a minimal hunting season in 2014.
He's Bruce Stillings, big game biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. North Dakota pronghorn population has definitely rebounded. And I know at times some people might say, well, why have a hunting season now? The longer that a season remains closed, the less connection that hunters are going to have to that population. And biologists realize and understand that if you can provide a limited opportunity, you can keep the population growing, especially in areas where it's above management goals. And that's the same thing. We could never have a season on bighorn sheep, and we're not going to end up with bighorn sheep overrunning the entire state of North Dakota. It's not going to work that way. We've got a limited area that you're going to find bighorn sheep. And we have pronghorn numbers that have grown to a point where in that particular area, a managed hunt is not going to impede the production. So you close it in the other areas. What are those objectives? What are those numbers? Bruce Stillings answers that. This is the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Bruce Stillings, big game biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, is our guest. North Dakota pronghorn population has been on the rebound. The hunting season has been closed since 2010, and yes, my friends, it's open in 2014. Bruce, walk me through where you're at in terms of wildlife management, population objectives, going beyond a little bit from just the generalization that some people might have. Hey, cool, population of antelope is rebounded. We can have a hunting season. For some of the hunters, might be even more interested in breaking down some of the numbers, the population objectives, and management of bighorn sheep, or excuse me, pronghorn in North Dakota, Bruce.
That's correct. We have population objectives that are based on habitat that can support a normal number of animals throughout the winter season, where they're within landowner tolerance and then able to provide reasonable hunting opportunities for our sportsmen. So we were able to meet those criteria down in Western Bowman Management Region. We were on the lower end of that population range, but we were within that population objective. Therefore, we're going to take advantage of having some surplus bucks, provide our hunters with opportunities, but at the same time still look to encourage future population growth so we can have more opportunities in the future.
Bruce, one thing that people constantly are drawn to is the actual work of game wardens and biologists, not some guy like me talking on the radio about what I guess I still do some of the surveys, and I shouldn't minimize what I do. People hear me more on the radio than what they realize I do out in the field. So I shouldn't be so self-depreciative, but even in the same context of what biologists do, myself doing morning brood surveys of sharp-tailed grouse and pheasants. It's different than the surveys that folks are doing on bighorn sheep and elk and moose and pronghorn antelope, where they get that Marlin Perkins, that real TV feel of biologists in the field. And the pronghorn surveys are probably a lot more closer to that than going out and counting mourning doves. Not to take away, but give our listeners a little bit of appreciation for the interesting survey work and the difficulty that it is.
It is. It's a tough process. A lot of labor goes into it. From July 2nd through the 9th, we had four airplanes, and we divide those out amongst our survey units across the state. We get complete coverage on our primary pronghorn range, which is everything west of Highway 85, and then we also get pretty good coverage east of 85. And within a survey unit, we're flying down the half-mile line, and then the biologist is classifying and counting animals 1/2 mile on each side of the airplane. So if they're within a survey unit, for instance, in 1A, that's going to encompass both Badlands habitat near the Little Missouri River, all the way extending out into the farm country, out to Highway 85, they're going to be flying that transect, counting animals 1/2 mile each side of the airplane, all the way through all the Badlands habitat, all the way through to the farm habitat, right up to the edge of the border. So we covered over 11,000 square miles in a week period. That's what's needed to get the numbers in order to make determinations for setting the seasons.
Unit 4A is the only unit that is open for hunting this year. And as I've explained earlier, is you take baby steps. You don't just open it up in the entire pronghorn range. But in doing those surveys, you obviously, Bruce, realized statistically that Unit 4A is above the management goals and objectives and would be able to provide some limited hunting opportunity. What are you seeing in some of the other units?
You know, within our primary pronghorn range, we saw numbers increase by about 16%, which is a nice little increase. The Southern Badlands, they were up about 15%. So that country north of Highway 12, south of Medora, they showed some increases as well. As you move north of Medora into the Northern Badlands, they were also up in that approximately 19%. So we saw increases, but again, they're not within that population objective that we'd like to see in order to be able to open the season. So we're optimistic if we can have a decent winter coming up with average fawn production in 2015, that we could see more hunting opportunities in 4A and then be able to expand open units into the Southern Badlands. And then maybe in 2 years, if we see the population response, we'll be able to open some of those units up in the Northern Badlands.
He's Bruce Stillings. I'm Doug Lear. You're listening to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. And we're talking about the pronghorn hunting season in North Dakota, open for the first time since 2009. And when we look at the pronghorn, you mentioned so much about the winters and the setback caused by pronghorn. We're looking for optimal conditions from winter. What are some other, maybe some habitat issues and some land use issues that impact pronghorns, Bruce?
Absolutely. You know, stable habitat conditions with pronghorn, their world being changed with habitat being fragmented. We need to try to minimize those impacts if we're going to continue to have future healthy pronghorn populations and good hunting opportunities in the future. They need to have space, and these are animals that can move up to 200 miles throughout the course of a year to fulfill their seasonal requirements. Yeah, need space, need mild winters, and we'll hope for some population increases.
So many variables out of our control, and most notably would be the weather. Habitat, much of the time linked to the weather, how the grass conditions are. Habitat also connected in some different species, like pheasants, would be with economics and the decline of CRP. So there's a lot of different variables that come into play. But the good news in all of this, folks, is pronghorn are coming back in North Dakota. And as I said at the beginning of the program, if you didn't catch it, it's podcast at kfgo.com, is the fact that this is a niche species. I would love, I doubt we'll ever be able to talk about, I shouldn't say ever, I would love sometime in the future to be able to talk about the potential for a sage grouse season again, because the numbers had come back. I would love to be able to talk about a prairie chicken season because the numbers were coming back. It is a big smile on my face when I announce to you that the pronghorn season in North Dakota for 2014 is alive and well. Where people are going, what they're doing outdoors, Pat Stockdale with a Central Dakota Outdoors Report is up next on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear, thanking you for allowing us to be a part of your weekend outdoors. Boy, when you start looking at and checking off where we're at in terms of summer 2014 or the end of summer 2014 and the beginning of fall 2014, there's a lot of work that's been done and a lot of things coming up as we speak right now into weekend number four of the early Canada goose season in North Dakota. We are into the first weekend, the first full weekend of the deer bow season in North. Bow season opened up yesterday in North Dakota. The mountain lion season opened up yesterday. The dove season will open up on Monday. And then on Wednesday will be the deadline for fall turkey. What's going to be interesting is that coming up next weekend, there's no openers. Typically, the first weekend in September, you would, depending on how things fall out, have your sharp-tailed grouse, partridge, ruffed grouse. Those open up on September 13th. And in fact, here in just a couple of moments, we're going to be bringing you a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale and give you an update on where people are going and what they have been doing. But as I said, a lot of stuff really, really cranking up as we speak. I'm taken back personally right now, and it's hit me throughout this week, is I love connecting right now with past years and some of my friends having their kids go to college for the first time this fall. And thinking back 20 years ago to 1994 was my last semester in college. So 20 years ago was my last semester. Many, many students this week at NDSU beginning their college career. And mine was bridged with my first, last, and only tour of fighting fires out in Montana. That was in August of 1994. And I'm not the first to realize and to understand how much time flies, but when I start putting things in connection as to how old I am now, how old I was then, and the places I've gone, the things that I've done in my career outdoors, it does. It makes me wax nostalgic just a little bit for the young guys and gals that are starting their career in natural resources, in biology, wanting to become a game warden, a fisheries biologist, a wildlife biologist, maybe some wanting to become an outreach biologist. And good luck to you. If you ever have a question or a topic about careers in the outdoors, feel free to shoot me an email. It's outdoorslive@gmail.com. Outdoorslive@gmail.com. In fact, I do appreciate it. I know I'm getting older and my connection to the current situation in college is way far gone. But when it comes to getting a job in the outdoors, I don't think a lot has changed. I really don't. A lot of it comes down to experience. And after I graduated from college in December of 1994, I had worked at the Valley City Wetlands District two different summers, summer of 94, summer of 1990. I'd worked at the Cullum Wetlands District office of the Fish and Wildlife Service two different summers, and Long Lake National Wildlife Refuge for one summer. So experience, to me, is what gives the next generation of biologists and game wardens a leg up. There's going to be lots of kids with biology, wildlife management, fisheries management degrees, natural resource management degrees, but that experience is what can set people apart. As you're heading outdoors, what's going on across the prairies of North Dakota? We connect with Pat Stockdale. She is a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Pat, what's cooking outdoors this week.
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River System. Have a great Labor Day weekend, and for those spending it on the water, Devil's Lake remains the place to be. That's despite last weekend's wet, windy weather. However, activity is lighter after the front, but look for continued good small walleye success throughout much of Devil's Lake. In addition, white bass kicked in some areas, along with improving perch activity in the north end of Six Mile Bay. Activity has been light on Pipestem Reservoir, Jamestown Reservoir, and Spiritwood Lake, but the Lake Ashtabula walleye bite remains okay. However, anglers still have to work harder for fish. Try 11 to 15 feet using spinners and a variety of bait, or you might want to try crankbaits. Some nice size smallmouth bass are mixed in as well. Anglers are finding steady southeast and south-central success with better reports from western Richland County over to McIntosh County, along with Barnes and Lemoore County lakes. Cover lots of water, though, trolling crankbaits or spinners and nightcrawlers, or soft plastics to locate the fish. Then try using jigs or slip bobbers once you find them. Try summer transition zones and deeper holes in 15 to 25 feet. Look for hit-and-miss smallmouth bass success on the Cheyenne River, from Valley City down to Fort Ransom and up towards Kindred, with a few walleye and catfish mixed in. Try low head dams for walleye and off the current breaks for bass. The Missouri River is looking pretty darn chocolatey after last weekend's heavy rains feeding the river as well as its tributaries. The stained water is extending as far south as the state line as well. Walleye success remains limited upstream in the tail race, but you might want to try downriver from the chutes in the boats during the day. Try spinners and bottom bouncers and night crawlers. However, there's continued catfish success in the chutes with a mix of other species. Try jigs in the spillway channel or the coal veins from boats in the evening for walleye. The key there is the evening hours. Also, you might want to try crankbaits in the morning or evening, sounding familiar, from shore, or also mix it up with live bait during the day. Lake Sakakawea remains poor to fair for walleye on the east end and even up into the midsection, although a few more fish are showing up around the three bays west of Sakakawea State Park and east around Mallard Island and Stanky Bay. Success is still generally light, however, as is the activity. Salmon are fair size-wise, but not in quantity, in 85 feet and deeper. Try spoons or flashers and flies, or flashers and squids. Hunting season in North Dakota is officially underway, with archery deer and dove seasons kicking off this weekend. Enjoy the special opportunities, and please be safe out there.
Appreciate that report, Pat Sockdal, with your Central Dakota Outdoors Report. Coming up next on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, the last shot. For this weekend, we bring in CJ Johnson with a little update on where people are going, what they're doing east of the Red River. It's a Minnesota Outdoors Report for you on the mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the last shot for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Douglas CJ Johnson, just around the corner, waiting in the wings to give you an update on the Minnesota Outdoors. It's the North Dakota dove season opener on Monday, and our dove season is scheduled to run through November 9th. Typically, we get any kind of a cold stretch, some frosty, freezy mornings in September. You start to see the doves bunch up and move on out. You're already starting to see the doves bunch up. The daily limit is 15. Possession limit is 45. The legal hunting hours, a half hour before sunrise to sunset each day. And you need to have your fishing, hunting, fur bearer certificate, your general game and habitat license, and 16 and older need a small game license. There's no shooting doves on power lines. You cannot legally shoot doves on power lines. Have I said that yet? You cannot legally shoot doves off of power lines. Please do not shoot doves off of power lines. Also, the North Dakota Swan Lottery has been held. 300 tags remaining. If you did not draw a tag, you can't get an extra tag. But if you did not draw a tag, beginning on September 3rd, the remaining licenses will be issued on a first-come, first-served basis. So, and these are open to non-residents as well. $10 for residents, $30 for non-residents. The swan hunting season will run October 4th through January 4th. And now on this Labor Day holiday weekend, we put him to work. We're going to take a little closer look at where people are going, what they're doing outdoors in Minnesota. And we do on that, we call on our good friend CJ Johnson. He is a Lisbon, North Dakota native, and he spent his career covering the outdoors across Minnesota. And he joins us as a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. CJ, where are people going? What are they doing this weekend outdoors?
Well, by golly, they're doing quite a bit with regard to fishing and so forth all over the state. And if you want to mix a little fun in it, too, I should remind everybody that the Minnesota Great Get-Together at the State Fair ends on Labor Day. And there are an awful lot of, just an FYI here, really good little fishing lakes around the Twin Cities, in case you're down here. But looking at Lake of the Woods, Joe Henry up there says mixed methods bring in limits of walleye this week. He says a mix of downrigging and pulling spinners is working the best. And he also says Archie's Reef is doing well just out and outside the lighthouse gap using some spinners tipped with crawlers or leeches up at Lake of the Woods. Over in Ely, the chamber there says walleye fishing has had some ups and downs recently, but those who are applying themselves, they're bringing in some good fillets. They say leeches have been replaced with crawlers and minnows right now, and that large pike are still hammering spinner baits and spoons up in the Ely area. They're responding to a rapid retrieval now. These are the pikes. No matter how fast you crank it on a pike, you can't outrun them with your water bait. So go ahead and crank like crazy. Reed Sporting Goods over at Leech Lake says walleyes are taking crank baits on the 10 to 15 foot flats. Some of them have been caught on Lindy Ridge and crawlers on the humps of Walker Bay in the evening. And later at night, they're using crank baits in about 9 to 12 feet of water from Sandpoint to Cedar Point in the Leech Lake area. Terry's Boat Harbor up on Lake Mille Lacs says crankbaits, plastics, and live bait. They're turning mostly smallmouth bass right now and doing well on the rocky points and the reefs at this point. If you hit the mud plants and gravel bars in 22 to 28 feet of water, you're going to find walleyes during the day, and they move to the rocky reefs at night with leeches and slip boppers, actually doing a lot better now with night crawlers. Nathan Campbell over in Park Rapids says some have begun using different colors right now in preparation for fall fishing. In fact, the walleyes are being dispersed all along the weed edges in about 8 to 20 feet of water. Submergent vegetation, I can't even say it, provides excellent habitat for some of the walleyes' favorite snacks. Of course, that's bait fish. Best time to fish these areas, early morning, early evening, and if you use long shank jigs tipped with a minnow, or a crawler, they're going to put most of the fillets in your bucket. Christofferson Bait and Tackle in Alexandria says spinner rigs and crawler jigs with minnows are producing walleyes 20 to 24 feet of water on Lake Miltona and Lake Ida. Lake Carlos, Lake Hamadou, and Lake Geneva up there have got most of the crappie action in the Alexandria area. Emily Schneider in Otter Tail Lakes Country says they're fishing really good right now this time of the year. It does vary, you know, across this long state. They said walleyes during the day have been found in waters 10 to 20 feet with anglers using jigs and minnows and bottom bouncers. Put a night crawler on that one. And at night, they move to shallower depths of 5 to 7 feet. That's basically nose on the shoreline. And a few anglers are finding luck using shad wraps to hook the more shallower fish at the early evening. Becca Hart in Detroit Lake says walleye still relating to mid-lake structure. They're down about 20, 28 feet. Rigging minnows, leeches, and crawlers, jigging minnows or wraps, or pulling bottom bouncers and spinners on a very, very slow retrieval. All of them doing really good right now in the DL area. Bass activity slowed at the cold front they went through, but they're going to be active again and look for smallmouth action to pick up over the next several weeks. Well, Doug, you know, as I've noted in previous weeks, my wife and I have been married a long time, and I still seem to get things wrong, and I don't know why. It's not on purpose. I don't think.
Yep.
And when I don't, our conversation usually ends up in a little verbal battle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, the other day, my wife was telling me about what she wanted for our special upcoming anniversary, and she looked at me and smiled. She says, I want something that's shiny and goes from 0 to 150 in 3 seconds.
Wow.
I got a nail. I bought her a bathroom scale.
Oh, CJ.
Oh, that's when the fight started.
Oh.
Remember, fishing's always great. It's a catch, you got to work it.
Yeah, I got a feeling you'll be fishing by yourself if you keep that up, CJ.
I wonder why my ice fishing house is so lonely.
Exactly. Hey, great stuff. CJ Johnson, he's a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Thanks so much for your time, CJ.
You betcha, anytime.
And we always appreciate our time with CJ Johnson. And that, my friends, is going to wrap up this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. He is the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Couldn't do it without Bob. This show is podcast at kfgo.com because of the assistance of Bob. And there's a blog at kfgo.com. That I do. I blog at kfgo.com. And feel free to shoot me an email. It's outdoorslive@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm Doug Lear reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.